Hello and welcome to the Folk Music Podcast. My name is Anders, and in this episode I'm speaking with Norwegian piano and keyboard player Lars Jakob Rudjord. Lars Jakob has been working in a musical field somewhere in between classical, jazz and folk for many years. He has currently released 3 albums under his own name, and his next album project is scheduled to be released in 2023. For this project, called Kjempejo, Lars Jakob has written original music inspired by a legendary character called Kjempejo, or Giant John, who used to live in a place in southern Norway called Tovdal a couple hundred years ago. In our conversation, we talk about the Kjempejo project, but we also touch on a number of different topics, as usual. We talk about the relationship between different genres, like classical, jazz, and folk, and whether it actually makes sense to talk about musical genres anymore in this day and age. It's really interesting to observe how the old boundaries between genres are kind of falling apart, and people are perhaps using different ways of talking about music than we traditionally used to do. So, really interesting. We talk about different ways to explore your voice as a composer. We talk quite a bit about the piano. We're both piano players, so that's something we both have a lot of opinions about. We talk about the piano as a folk music instrument, and the challenge of approaching fiddle music with this instrument. We also talk about the challenges of approaching traditional music coming from a different genre of music, which is also something we can definitely both relate to. So yeah, really interesting stuff. We even touch on small town life as a musician, as opposed to living in a big musical hub like a big city. So yeah, lots of interesting stuff. I greatly enjoyed this conversation with Lars Jakob, and I'm pretty sure you will too. Before we jump into today's conversation, I'll just quickly mention that it is possible to support the show financially via Patreon. And needless to say, every contribution is greatly appreciated. You can find our Patreon account via a link on our website, or you can go to patreon.com/thefolkmusicpodcast. And as I said many times already, the show will still remain 100% free. But there will be certain types of bonus content available to our Patreon backers. And we're still working on figuring out what kind of content we will keep out in the open, so to speak, and what kind of content we will reserve for the Patreon backers. So if you have any feedback or ideas or thoughts about this at all, please get in touch. You know, running a podcast like this can it can sometimes feel like you are a bit removed from your audience, as opposed to, say, if you're running a YouTube channel or something, because there's no immediate way for the audience to give you feedback. So, yeah, any kind of feedback, whether on social media or via email, is greatly appreciated. So, with all that said, here is my conversation with Lars Jakob Rudjord. All right, I'm here with Lars Jakob Rudjord. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here.
That's very kind. It's very nice to have you on. It's kind of funny. I feel like I've known you for many, many years, but I think we met for the first time this summer. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. And likewise, because I've been kind of following you here and there for a number of years, and I also felt, you know, that we knew each other. But
yeah, it's quite interesting, this like online relationship or whatever. Like, I feel like that's kind of internet at its best. Like, I mean, there's so many problems with online culture and social media and stuff, but whenever, like, for example, Instagram facilitates encounters and meetings between people who are really interested in what they're up to, I feel like that's a great thing.
Yeah.
And it was also nice meeting you in real life this summer, because I played at a festival in your hometown. in the south of Norway. And it was a really busy weekend, but we managed to have a cup of coffee and even go for a run. So that was really nice. You got to show me some of the beautiful landscape around Farsund.
Thank you for joining. I also like that our first meeting was actually a run.
Yeah, that's nice. Very fitting. Very nice. Yeah. It's also interesting, like, don't take this the wrong way, but I find every time I meet people, like, in real life for the first time, they're always shorter than I expect. Do you have the same thing? Not that you're very short, but maybe internet makes people bigger. I don't know.
Maybe. I also think you and me are kind of, we look kind of a little the same, you know, because of our glasses and hair and being like keyboard players.
Nerds.
Nerds. It's nice.
And I feel like we also have a sort of a similar background in that you also studied jazz music here in Norway before you ventured on to, on a quest to find your inner musical self. Like the main reason I invited you on the podcast today is for you to talk about your upcoming show, your upcoming project, Kjempejo, which is inspired by traditional music from southern Norway. But before we get into that project, maybe you can give us a short introduction to your musical work and like how you got to end up, or how you got where you are today, basically.
When I started out, like, playing the piano for real, I was maybe 15, 16 years or something, and I was only playing, you know, classical piano, and I was kind of determined to become the new Leif Ove Andsnes or something. He was like my big hero. And then I got into like some problems with my arms, like what's it called in English, the
tendonitis, maybe.
So I had to kind of just give up playing for about a year or something, and during that time I kind of discovered jazz music and more like rhythmic music, and I wanted to start doing that instead.
And how also, old were you then?
Maybe 18 years or 17, 18 years ish. And at the same time, I kind of, some way, I don't know exactly how, I discovered that I enjoyed like making music and creating music as well. And that and a few other things kind of led me more into the jazz direction. There was this band called, Norwegian band called Come Shine, that I was a huge fan of, and they they were very important for me, both choosing jazz music and choosing to kind of make a living as a musician.
Yeah.
You know, one thing led to another, and I moved to Oslo, and I studied musicology at the university for 3 years for a bachelor's degree. Mm-hmm. And then I applied for the Norwegian Academy of Music, and I got in there, and I did a bachelor's degree in jazz piano.
Cool. So it's quite interesting, like, in my mind, like, at least how I used to think about it before, like, classical music and jazz is almost like polar opposites in musical terms. At least at first glance, like you said, like, you discovered you enjoyed writing music, and in classical music, that's kind of like a fairly divided thing. Like, you have the composers who write the music, and then you have the musicians who play the music, sort of. Whereas in jazz, it's much more common or almost expected of you as a player that you write your own tunes and your own music.
Yeah, and I think this was kind of also part of why I kind of, you know, ditched the classical music career plans, because I wanted to decide for myself, you know, what to play and how to play. And
but I feel like you have sort of gotten back to the classical world a little bit, haven't you, after finishing your jazz studies?
Kind of. So I was never like a great jazz student, you know, because I didn't I didn't want to spend time like learning the, you know, the American tradition and practicing all the scales and know what scales went to which chords and everything, because I don't know, I just found it
boring.
Am I allowed to say boring? Yeah. And it was just more interesting for me to explore my own musical world in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, and for a long while, like, you know, the Norwegian jazz scene had been innovative and embracing other kinds of or other ways of playing jazz.
Mm.
And also I listened a lot to my kind of my favorite jazz piano player, Jan Johansson, the Swedish guy who created Jazz på Svenska. And he became also kind of important to me because of his, you know, his playing style and the subtleness of everything and the kind of quiet melodies. They spoke very strongly to me.
That's and really a great he, you album, know, that Jazz på Svenska.
Yeah, yeah. And also it's like Swedish folk tunes, you know, played on the piano and
it's so
bass.
Simple, like that album.
Yeah.
It's like super simple. It's just him on the piano and a double bass player. And he just plays the melodies and like some simple kind of blues-based improvisations over it. And it's just so interesting and so fascinating. And very minimalistic, which I guess I feel like you have a very minimalist approach to music as well.
Yeah, maybe. I always felt that I don't want to play more than what's needed, you know, in order to say something or express something. And maybe it's also part of my, you know, I'm from the south of Norway, from a small town, and in the south of Norway, everyone are very, you know, modest, and we don't make it like a huge appearance of ourselves, and we like to, you know, stay in
a little bit too much in the other direction, people would say, maybe.
Yeah. So yeah, like through this whole process of starting with playing classical piano and then switching to like exploring jazz music, I also kind of after a while I kind of found maybe in a way a way back to the classical piano, but not about how the music sounded like, but more how to play the, you know, the acoustic piano. So that's kind of an important thing for me, is to like make the piano sing and sound. It has so many layers of expression, like that you can get from the touch of the keys and the use of your arms and everything, everything nerdy stuff. And that's something I always kind of missed in jazz music, because it's a lot about playing fast and playing cool riffs and everything, and the you know, the way of playing and getting something from your mind through your arm and making it express something on the instrument is a very interesting thing that's too often forgotten. Yeah,
exactly. Like, because the piano is a very like mechanical instrument in a way. Like if you compare it to just singing or like playing a flute, where you're like, you're very close to the source of the sound, sort of. Whereas if you play the piano, like there's like you're pushing a key, which is moving a hammer to hit the string. It's like there's a lot of like technology between you and and the actual sounding element.
Yeah, and there's like 500 parts put together in or something.
And I know what you mean with the whole thing, the jazz community, like jazz piano players. For most players, the focus isn't on the tone necessarily. It's more about the which notes you're playing. I just remember like back when I was in university, I used to be so fascinated by Norwegian piano player Tord Gustafsson. Like because his albums just the Ground and those albums, they came out around that time, I think. And like he was famous for having such a great touch, like he could play just simple melodies and simple chords, and it just sound beautiful. And I always used to envy people who could do that, because I've never had a great touch on the piano, like maybe because I've played so many other keyboard instruments, and I never played classical music, so I never trained to get that touch really. So there's something I envy people, piano players with a great touch.
Yeah. It's something, you know, it's something that you kind of build and learn over time, I think, if you're... I spent a lot of time also playing, like, not the acoustic piano, and, you know, playing keyboards and synthesizers and stuff. And if I do that for an amount of time and then, go back to the piano, then I just, wow, suddenly I think my playing sounds like shit, you know? So I think it's like you have to keep yourself fit on the piano to make it sound good.
With everything else. Probably,
But you said about, Tord Gustafsson, and of course, I don't want to sound like I hate every jazz musician, because there's so many brilliant musicians. And also, you know, Bugge Wesseltoft.
He's also one of those guys.
Enormously great piano player. Especially his, you know, in his It's Snowing on My Piano, this Christmas album.
Such a classic,
It's great beautifully stuff. Played.
I suppose it's not fair to say that all Norwegian jazz piano players, that they're not concerned about their tone, because I suppose Norway is kind of famous for jazz that has more focus on tonal qualities and like soundscapes and more than like the American tradition, at least for the past 20 years or whatever.
Absolutely.
Just to put that out there. But I mean, a theme I like keep returning to on this podcast, and maybe that says something about me as well, is I find it interesting to hear about people's musical journeys when it comes to like finding their own musical voice. So I'm curious, where did you go from there? Like, I mean, you had your background from classical music, and then you studied jazz, and you figured out you couldn't be bothered learning all the scales. and you knew you wanted to write original music. So where did you go to find inspiration, and what kind of music did you write?
Well, during my studies, my piano teacher was Misha Alperin. He sadly passed away a couple of years ago. But he was like not exactly like me, not into the American jazz at all. So every of his students, our piano lessons were much more of a like composition lessons and philosophy lessons, and we were like for 4 years we were working with finding what's me in my music and what's my music going to sound like. So we were right. More kind of exploring how to not copy someone else, but rather finding your own voice in a way. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we would explore maybe too much and get so obsessed with saying something specific that you overdo it, you know?
How? What do you mean?
No, if you say if you want to find your voice on the piano, then you try too much and mm-hmm. then that voice is like packed on top of you instead of coming from inside.
Yeah, I see what you mean now. Mm-hmm.
So after I also kind of wrote a lot of music, you know, together with other people, with my now wife. I've been playing for many years. We started writing together and I wrote for other projects and other styles. I like to explore like different sides of genres and stuff. And I wrote a lot of things that were maybe a little more on the experimental side, mm-hmm. like sound wise and melody and harmony wise. And I loved it then, but after a while I wasn't that comfortable doing things without clear tonal harmony and clear singable melody, you know. So that's maybe what's become the most important thing for me is strong melodies that you can remember and sing after you heard it. Yeah
No, that's not easy.
No, it's hard, but I think also what we talked about just a few moments ago about doing it simple is like kind of the key, mm-hmm. Because I always think that the best melodies are the ones that are simple, because if they're too complicated, you know, it's hard to remember and it's hard to like get them to stick in a way.
Mm-hmm. But like how would you like, because you released a number of albums at this point with mm-hmm. Your original music, I'm just curious, like what kind of genre would you classify them as? Would you call yourself like a part of the classical music community in a way, or?
In some way, yes. But when I was, when I was done recording my first album, I was just searching the internet for like similar ensembles, because I played with Katrine Schött on the cello and Adrian Myhr on the double bass, mm-hmm. and me on the piano. So I was just keen to see if what other bands with the same instrumentation were doing. And then I discovered this guy called Olafur Arnalds mm-hmm. online. And I was so happy that there was someone else doing music like in the same landscape-ish as I did or wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And then after a while, I kind of discovered that he was like huge. He was like a world star within a genre called either neoclassical or modern classical. Mm. So I started to identify myself within this kind of genre. And I've kind of stuck there since. You know, it's not like classical music in the way that people normally identify classical music with the old composers and stuff, but it's It's like a more simple form of classical music using acoustic instruments and electronics. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Personally, I'm a big fan of like Philip Glass and.
Yeah.
And Steve Reich.
Me too.
Well, I suppose none of those composers are very concerned with like very memorable themes. They're more about like patterns repeating over and over and creating like a soundscape.
Yeah, structures and patterns. Yeah,
exactly. So yeah, I also find it interesting to see how like the borders between classical music and jazz sort of like breaks down at the point, and like at some point. It's more about who the composer is than what the music is. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. But I, actually, you know, I really don't care that much about which genre it is. I care so much more about the music and how the music sounds like. You know. So I kind of wish that we didn't have any genres.
yeah, but I was going to say, like, the only time it really matters is when you're trying to book a gig.
Yeah.
Or sell your music to someone.
Yep.
Because festivals and Spotify, they all love genres, don't they?
They do.
Although it's interesting, like, I see, especially on Spotify and those, like, the in this age of playlists... Mm-hmm. The younger generations, well, I don't know anything about the younger generation, honestly, but it seems to me that they're more concerned with, like you have these playlists for different occasions and different moods and different vibes, more than like, I want to listen to jazz music, but it's more like I want to listen to some chill out music or some workout music. So, yeah, digressions.
Yeah, but that's what digressions are also part of the streaming game, you know, because if you listen only to like a compiled playlist all day long, there's no point in like sticking to what you're listening to. Like if you listen to an album from A to B or A to Z, there's kind of a more there's a bigger reason to not pause it and do something else. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge proponent of the album. Like, I'm a big fan, anyway, of the album as an art form. I feel like this playlist can, like, make the music more into a commodity in a way. Like, and to a certain extent, I suppose, it can be as well. But I just really like the idea of listening to an album in the way that the artist intended the music to be listened to, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So, but speaking of albums, you have an album coming out next year?
Yes. So it actually started a few years ago when I heard the Norwegian fiddle player Annbjørg Lien playing a song or slot from my local area. The song was called Kjempejo, and that's like translates to something like Giant Joe or Joe the Giant or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was kind of not really into like listening to folk music at that time, but there was just something about this tune that stuck around in me. I just liked it. And a while after, I started reading a little bit, and I discovered that this guy called Kjempejo, he was like a giant and a folk dancer and a kind of almost mythical character in the 1800s in the south of Norway. And he was kind of almost like a wizard, or he knew magic and There were a lot of exciting stories around him. But also he was my great-great-grandfather.
Huh. How did you discover that?
I read some books because my uncle is a historian and he wrote a lot of texts about, you know, my family and the previous generations. And when I discovered that me and Kjempio were blood, then I kind of had no other way than making something out of this. So I started writing new music, and I tried to like become inspired by all the exciting and strange stories that I found about Kjempio. But I also wanted to like connect it to the folk music from Tovdal. That's where he lived. And so I teamed up with a fiddle player called Guro Kvifte Nesheim and another fiddle player called Johanne Flottorp. And those two are maybe the like biggest experts in the Tovdal folk music tradition, because they had this guy Salve Austenå, fiddle player from Tovdal, as teacher, and they learned like all the Tovdal tunes from scratch, even since they were small kids, so they have that tradition in their blood.
Cool.
And then I kind of started trying, you know, to study the tunes from Tovdal.
Did they have any prior experience with Norwegian traditional music at that point, or was that your first encounter with it?
Yes, I used to play as a musician for around 10 years with Carl Seglem, it's a Norwegian saxophone and goat horn player. And in his band, we've been working with, mostly his music, but strongly influenced by Western Norway folk tunes. And also, I've been Håkon Høgemo, the fiddle player, is in his band, and also Sigrid Mollestad. So I've been kind of acquainted with Norwegian folk music, but I haven't played it like for real. And I also think that's connected to the fact that I play the piano, and the piano is a hard instrument to play fiddle tunes on.
Yeah, it's a very different instrument from the fiddle.
Yeah, very. And also when I started like trying to understand and learn the Tovdal tradition, I started out with this Kjempio tune, and I spent weeks and weeks just trying to understand how it was like built up, and how the timing worked and everything. And what I used to listen to, like to get to know it, was like a recording by Salve Austenå from like, I don't know, many, many, many years ago, the band sound then. And I had to like, call people all the time, like call Guru and ask, where is actually the one here?
Yeah.
Because I couldn't get it under my skin, you know?
Yeah. So it's surprisingly hard. Like, I just remember personally when I tried to learn the local fiddle tradition in Engerdal, where I'm from. Mm. Like, I had the same issue that you were talking about. Like, I got these recordings of the tunes, and I couldn't figure out, like, which of these beats is the first beat in the bar, you know what I mean? So yeah. for many of the tunes, I actually learned them the wrong way. So that, like, I had to, like, get that out of my head and just, no, that's actually the third beat of the bar. Yeah. Like, so I had to...
yeah, I know what you mean.
It's fascinating that you can actually do that. Like, imagine learning, like, a pop tune with the wrong...
Yeah. And I have the exact same problem with a few of the tunes in Carl Seglem band, where especially the ones in three, you know, where they when the fiddle players you know, tap their foot in either 1 and 2 or 1 2 3 1, then I always kind of mix up. So I hear it as 3 1. But they actually mean 1 2 3 and so on. After 10 years, there's one tune that I have to play with my counting and the other ones play with their counting. Otherwise, I can't play it.
It's really hard to unlearn if you have actually learned it the wrong way.
Yeah.
But what did you do with the music when you kind of familiarized yourself with the tunes?
You know, I ended up not playing so many of the traditional tunes, but rather making my own tunes. Mm-hmm. So I started by arranging or kind of adapting this Kjempejo tune. So I wrote like a new part for it, kind of inspired by the original, but in a more piano-based way. Mm-hmm. And I kind of tried to pick out some of the melodies that I twisted and tweaked a little bit and made them kind of to my own. And then I like wrote chords and rhythms and harmony for the band, for the like the tune part where the fiddle player plays the tune. Mm-hmm. And then for the rest of the songs or the tunes, I kind of try to use like this sense of folk music sound to influence my own sound in mm-hmm. a way. And that was also kind of difficult for me, but very fun and very challenging, because I had to try to think like, what can I do in my songs that speaks to this folk music. So one of the things was actually that's how I decided to to include drums in the band, because I found out quite early that I had to work with the rhythm parts mm-hmm. a lot. So I actually used a lot this 1 2 3 1 2, like emphasize the 1 and 2 mm-hmm. things, because you know Kjempejo, he was like a great dancer, so I had to write at least a couple of tunes that were at least a little danceable, you know.
Yeah,
so the rhythmical part was important, and in some of the melodies I tried to like be inspired from, you know, the way the fiddlers would play a ganga or something like that, and make mm-hmm. make melodies that could like repeat themselves in different ways and in different keys. And then there was this other challenge, you know, again with the piano, mm-hmm. and you know, we can't play like quarter. What's it called? Like the hal kvarttone, quarter tones.
Quarter notes, quarter tones. I don't know.
Quarter note is like fjärdedel.
It's not even technically a quarter note, like even though people call them that in Norwegian, because it's a very like personal way of intonating fiddle tunes. Yeah. Isn't that that's what you're talking about, right?
Yes, yes. Absolutely.
So they're playing these intervals that is in between what we can play on the piano, but it's also sort of like personal from player to player. So it's that's one of the things that make this music so hard to play on the piano or the accordion or any instrument where you can't like fine tune the pitch while you're playing.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, you know, that aspect of including it was kind of difficult, but I tried to solve it with, you know, challenging my harmonies more. So I tried to like make some parts a little more dissonant in a way, but not dissonant in the ugly way. I tried to find dissonances that sounded nice and harmonic, especially in like the correlation between the two string players, you know, the hardanger fiddle player and the cello player. So I think they maybe don't like me that much because of writing difficult parts for them to intonate. But they've done it brilliantly. So
yeah. So this sounds like a project where it's like you're writing very specifically for these players who are involved. Like, you know who will be playing it. It's not just written for any drummer. It's written for Jakob, who plays in your band.
Yeah. It was eventually, as the process went along, you know, I spent a lot of time just thinking and trying before I decided to ask. But when Jakob and Guru and Johanna and Katrine came on board, then it was much easier to write for them in a way.
Yeah.
So, of course, the piano parts are like central and important, but also I did kind of some stupid recordings with a hand drum that I had playing around, like as a basis for what Jakob Jansson could like evolve to. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, real drumming for the records and everything. Yeah. And also I've been playing with Katrin on the cello for like 15 years soon. So we know each other well. And I know what comes out of her cello if I send her this piece of music, you know. Yeah.
Great. So when do you plan on releasing the album?
It's planned in March 23. So we actually already played quite a few shows with this already, because the music was a commissioned piece for Farsund Folkfestival and Riksscenen already in 21.
Okay.
So we played it first time like in August 21. And then me and Johanne Flottorp have been playing duo for a tour in southern Norway. And also I've been gathering the band again for like a few gigs this year already. So now we're looking forward to like get the album out as well, so that the world, you know, can hear what we have been doing.
yeah, that's a nice feeling, like when you're releasing an album, it's like the to finally have the finished project, because it's such a long process. Like, I know personally, making an album is just such a big undertaking, and it's just such a relief when it's actually out in the world.
It is.
So I hope you get to play a good few gigs with this project.
Thank
I think
you.
It sounds really great. So I'm really looking forward to hearing you live.
Thanks. I'm glad to hear that. Thank you.
So I'm not going to keep you all day. Just have a couple more questions I'd like to ask you while I have you on the line.
Of course.
Because I mean, as I mentioned a couple of times, I see a good few similarities between our journeys. And you also moved back to your hometown, Farsund, in the south of Norway. I'm just curious, how do you find the small town life as a musician? Like, I know it can be challenging not being in the big musical hub of the country. We've both lived in Oslo, and like I moved back to the countryside a couple of years, or more like 4 years ago at this point. So I'm just curious, like, what's been your experiences so far?
Yeah, well, first of all, I love living in Farsund, and I never regretted that I moved like to a tiny town in the south.
How small is it, just for reference?
It's like 10,000 people.
Yeah.
And at the point where we decided to move here, we were already touring a bit, and we didn't feel that connected to Oslo anymore.
No,
because we were like mostly playing other places than Oslo, you know. And the musicians we played with didn't live in Oslo either. So it was just as easy for us to travel from Farsund than from Oslo. You know, besides it's a 1.5 hour drive to the airports, and it's like 2 planes every day or something. But,
and they're both going to Alicante.
Yeah, yeah. But I think, at least for my part, the massive advantages about living here is, number one, I'm close to the ocean and I'm close to wild, beautiful nature. That's very important for me. And also, we can afford, you know, having a quite large house where we have our studio in the first floor, and that would never happen if we stayed in Oslo, you know.
You even have a grand piano in your living room?
I have a grand piano and some reed organs that I collect. There's more.
Are you?
Yeah.
But are you involved at all in like the local music scene?
A little bit sometimes, because we... me and my wife, Ingvild, play a few events here and there, like locally. And I'm often involved for something in the Farsund Folk Festival.
Yeah, great festival, by the way. I got to see it for the first time this summer.
Yeah, we're very glad to have to have Farsund Folk Festival around. Mm. Kind of important for us. But other than that, I mostly focus on staying in the studio and creating, you know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like, that was perhaps my main reason for moving out of the city as well. Like, obviously, it's cheaper to live in the countryside, but that also frees up more time to spend time on what you're actually... passionate about.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
And even just finding your passion, which is also
yeah. And you also get to do, like, you know, I know that we both did like fixing up our houses for quite a lot, and you know, you get to do stuff like going out in your garden and sawing something or building something. I think that's also important for musicians and artists to use your hands for something more rough than playing an instrument as well.
Definitely.
At least I enjoy that.
Yeah, me too. Like, I think if I were to have like a day job or whatever and still be able to like focus on doing some creative in the afternoon, I would definitely do something physical.
Yeah.
Rather than sitting in an office all day.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
So go out there and saw some wood. That's our recommendation.
Yeah. Yes.
Do you have any final recommendations for people like aspiring composers, like how to get out of like writer's block or a rut, or like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. I have writer's block quite often actually, and I don't know exactly how I get out of them, but I think for me, it's been important to do something else than just sit to try. So if you kind of get into a writer's block, I try to, you know, go out and chop some wood or something instead.
Yeah.
For a few days, maybe work in your garden or lift some heavy stuff in your trolley or something, just do something else for a while and don't think about the music. And I often find that when you do something, when you move, like either if it's running or if it's working with something outside, when you like use your body for something physical and you stay in movement, it kind of helps my thinking process a lot.
Yeah,
like at least subconsciously.
Yeah.
And I think that helps like get out some bad stuff from the head, so that there's more room for good stuff like new music.
Yeah,
like, you know what I mean?
I think I know what you mean, because I just thought of like I'd throw in an advice as well. Like, I find I have had some success with like make sure that I don't listen to something all the time. You know what I mean? Like I got into this circle where I would constantly listen to podcasts, mostly podcasts, but like audiobooks and rarely music for some reason. But like there's always someone speaking in my ear, whether I was like doing the dishes or going for a walk or whatever.
Yeah.
And then when I just forced myself to, okay, no, I'm just going to like be with my own thoughts for this walk, then all of these ideas and projects and these creative things, they just pop up, especially when I go for a walk or like, as you say, do something physical.
Yeah, but that's funny that you say that, because I used to be the same. I had to listen to podcasts. I never listened that much to music all the time, because I like to like put on something else that's not music when I've been working on music for the whole day. And also, you know, we both run occasionally, you know. And when I started running, I had to listen to a podcast every time. Yeah. And then this one trip, I just forgot my AirPods. And suddenly I discovered that, oh, wow, there are birds singing here. And there are cows making noise. And there are sheep making noise. And there's like the ocean making like a beautiful sound out there.
Yeah.
And that was kind of, wow, why haven't I thrown away this headset before? Because it's so much better to like listen to the nature.
Mm.
And after that, it also clears up the mind even more if there's not like a lot of information going into both of your ears all the time. Then you get tired in your brain, you know?
Yeah, I think like information overload is definitely a thing.
Yeah.
In our world, like, So, get out there and listen to some birds and some cows and get inspired. That's
absolutely
the advice.
Do it. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for coming on the show. It's great chatting with you.
Thank you.
Very inspiring.
Very glad to be on. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Folk Music Podcast. If you're curious about Lars Jakob's music or any of the other music we spoke about in this episode, you can find all the links on our website at thefolkmusicpodcast.com. As always, please follow us on social media, check out the Patreon account, and I'm going to leave you now with a short teaser from Lars Jakob's upcoming album project, Kjempejo. And until next week, take care, and I'll see you soon for another episode of the Folk Music Podcast. Bye-bye.